Scene 1. A hall in the prevailing tone of indigo blue, the antechamber to the rooms in which a mystic brotherhood carries on its work. 12 persons are present, conversing, each of whom in one way or another takes an interest in the endeavors of the brotherhood. Besides these 12, Felix Balda and Dr. Strader. The events of this scene and those following it take place about 13 years after the time of the Portal of Initiation. Ferdinand Reinecke. It is a most extraordinary summons that brings us all together here and now. It comes from people who have always thought that they were given special spirit tasks and kept themselves aloof from other mortals. But now it must be that the cosmic plan has clearly shown their spiritual eyes that they must link themselves with other men who fight their way through life by their own efforts, without all blessing from the spirit temple. I never was attracted by their style. They always have recourse to secrecy, whereas I want to stay with healthy thinking and lay great weight on simple common sense. The mystic brotherhood that summons us surely does not intend to raise us now to knowledge of its highest aims and plans. It will address us in mysterious words, but keep us in the temple's outer court, saying that we express the people's will, but using us to further its own plans. Thus we are made into the tools and servants of all those people who look down on us, and think they're born to rule us from on high. They would not think us yet mature enough to take a single step that would entail our getting near their spiritual light or glimpsing any of the temple's treasures. When I reflect on their true attitude, I find it naught but pride and trickery, fair spoken though it is, and humbly dressed. It would be best that we avoid, I think, the so-called wisdom offered to us here. But still, we must not let it seem as though we blindly set ourselves against the work that now is praised so much by everyone. Therefore, I say, let us politely listen to what these lords of wisdom have to say, and then be guided by our common sense. One who thus lets discretion be his tutor will never fall a prey to the temptations that come upon us from the mystic's temple. Michael Edelman. I cannot tell, I cannot even guess what treasures of the spirit have been given to those who now would find a bridge to us. But I know many really noble men belonging to this spiritual league. Though strictly silent, touching all the lore that must have been imparted to their souls, they clearly show through deeds and way of life the source that feeds them can be only good. For everything proceeding from their ranks displays the earmarks of the purest love. Therefore I think whatever moves them now is also good, as in the present project they seek to join themselves with men like us who know the striving of the soul for truth, but have no knowledge of the mystic ways. Bernard Redlich. The thing for us to follow here is caution. The mystics seem to think a time is near that spells the end of their old sovereignty. No reasonable person nowadays asks what the temples say about the truth. If any propositions made to us seem sensible to ordinary thinking, it may behoove us to collaborate. But they must lay aside the mystic robes if they would like to step across the bounds which long have kept them closed off from the world, as if they lived within the realms of light. Their high opinion of their merits will carry little weight among us here. They must not be awarded higher status than they deserve by normal human rules. Francesca de Mut. A large amount of what you are saying here makes me suspect that you are like those men who are completely blind to all the light that long has flowed from out the sanctuaries in streams of noble wisdom through the world, to heal and comfort all the souls of men. Only a man who lets his heart be brightened and lets his soul be filled with warmth and zeal can recognize the meaning of this hour. The mystic realm is now to be revealed to those who always felt themselves too weak to stand the sanctuary's ancient tests of fitness to receive the Spirit's light. Maria Treufels. Many sure signs there are that clearly show how many changes must take place in souls accepting leadership in their life's course. But far less certain that the mystic path can lead us surely to those blessed goals that stimulate the forces of men's souls. I sadly fear that leaders now are lacking, who, in their harnessing of nature's forces, combine both genius and agility, and thus, while working at their earthly tasks, show practical ability in action. If such men plant the roots of spirit work in the good soil of plain reality, they will be able, soberly, to work in this world for the good of all. Being convinced entirely of this view, I see in Strader, rather than the mystics, the forces needed for the leadership of men. How long we have experienced with pain that all our technical accomplishments have only added to the heavy fetters that hindered our free striving toward the Spirit. But now we can begin to have a hope of which till lately none could dream. In Strader's workshop, one can find already amazing things still in the model stage, which, if they work, may change technology in such a way that it will never more oppress our souls with dreary, hopeless weight. Strader, your words are optimistic, but my work seems headed in the right direction. It still must cross the gap that separates experiment from application, but up to now the expert eye inclines to find it technically feasible. I hope that the inventor of the thing may be allowed to give his own opinion of what he has accomplished at this stage. And since my words to some may seem immodest, I ask indulgence for them in advance. My aim is only to describe the feelings which from the forces for my work have sprung. It happens often in the course of life that all our labor soon becomes detached from feeling and from soul, becoming soulless, the more our spirit learns to dominate the forces found here in the realm of sense. Our labor in producing needed goods grows more mechanical from day to day, and with the labor also life itself. For years much careful thought has been devoted to finding measures, finding ways and means to rescue labor from technology, so that the soul would not be lamed by work, but workers feel connected with the spirit. Yet little was achieved by all these efforts, because one question only was considered, the right relationship of man to man. I, too, devoted many weary hours groping for the answer to this riddle. I always found that my deep cogitations produced in actual life no real value. I very nearly reached the harsh conclusion that in this world our destiny ordains that our great triumphs in material realms can only prejudice the spirit's growth. Then there occurred a seeming accident, producing a solution from the muddle. I had to institute experiments, which seemed at first remote from all these problems, but suddenly the thoughts sprang forth that showed me the right way. Through one experiment upon another, I finally discovered at my desk a way by which to harmonize the forces, so that when all the details are worked out, through pure technique, there will result that freedom in which the soul can properly unfold. No longer must our laborers be forced to spend their days in soul-degrading sweatshops, dreaming their lives away like vegetables. The products of technology will now be so distributed that every man will have what he may need for his own work within a house arranged to suit himself. I beg to speak first of this hope to you, so as to furnish some foundation for what I have to say about the summons the Rosicrucian Brotherhood has sent to persons standing outside their own ranks. If in the future we can find ourselves and let our souls develop properly, then only health will follow from those instincts by which one spirit seeks another one. So now it's fair to say that honest thinking is bound to recognize the correspondence between that summons and the signs we see. The spirit brothers want henceforth to offer their lofty treasures freely to all men, because all men should now demand them. Felix Balde. The words that we have just heard spoken here have fought their painful way out of a soul that's able to bestow upon our times true values in the realm of sense perception. in this particular field today, I think, no one can be compared with Dr. Strader. I have myself, by wholly different ways, discovered what is needed by the soul, and hence may be permitted a few words. I was by destiny assigned to the task of seeking out the treasures that a man can find within the precincts of his soul. And there I seemed to find the kind of wisdom that can illuminate all values here. I was allowed to study mysticism in contemplation and in solitude. And on this path it was not hard to learn how all that leads us men to mastery of forces working in the realm of sense imposes on us too a sort of blindfold, so that we grope to find our way in darkness. And all the treasures gained on earth by science, through application of the mind and senses, are still a fumbling in obscurity. I am convinced that only mystic paths can lead us to the genuine light of life. I stood myself upon these paths of truth as one who worked with no help from outside. But this is not within the power of all. Sense, knowledge, intellectual thought, to me, seem like a body without soul, as long as they so stubbornly resist the light that since the first days of the world has flowed out from the mystic sanctuaries. Hence we should grasp in love and eagerness the overtures made to us by the temple, upon whose threshold roses bright and red bedeck the somber symbol of man's death. Louis Fürchtegott. A man aware of his own soul's true worth is able to rely on his own judgment when he begins to seek out for himself the spirit and the spiritual worlds. But one is lost who only in blind faith surrenders to the leadership of others. Even the light that one would like to find within himself as force of higher wisdom deserves no serious acknowledgment unless its truth is clearly proved. The light can be a danger to a man if he inclines to it without such proof. For all too often on this path, the soul accepts as valid knowledge of the world what only springs from its unconscious wish. Frederick Geist. Every modern man should feel impelled to understand the workings of the mystics. It seems to me that if one thinks he knows just what the goal is like before he starts, illusion will result instead of truth. But of the mystic it is said that he relates himself to his high goal of truth as men do who desire to see the beauty of distant views from a high mountain peak. They do not paint the picture in advance. They wait until they've climbed up to the top and actually see what they have sought. Ferdinand Reinecke. At this time, let us not concern ourselves about the proper attitude toward truth. The brothers of the League will surely not be eager for opinions from us. But recently reports have reached my ears that an event of very special import has forced the brothers to consider us. Tomasius, who for many years already is active in a spiritual stream that is devoted to occult pursuits, has learned to use the thoughts and words of science, in which our times have perfect confidence, to clothe a presentation of the wisdom that was, till now, initiation lore. He has succeeded, through his brilliant work, in bringing many circles to applaud writings that have a logical appearance, but actually contain rank mysticism. Scholars who must be taken seriously have said enthusiastic things about him, and thus have added to his growing fame, which now seems dangerous in certain eyes. The initiates now fear that one effect will be to undermine the old belief that they have sole possession of this lore. Therefore they want to take into their fold all that Tomasius has brought to light. Their aim is to make everyone believe that they have been aware for many years that this material would be revealed, and this was merely part of their great plan. If they should now succeed in craftily enlisting us as members of their circle, then they will spread the word throughout the world that both Tomasius and his message were sent out by mighty lords of destiny, so that the common race of men might come to believe in their importance to the world. Kaspar Stürmer. The mystic school continues as before to claim the privilege of guiding man. This shows how little real respect it feels for all that healthy people have achieved in the long struggle to uplift mankind that started with the proof that soul and nature could be explained by mechanistic laws. It's painful to a liberated mind that such a clever man as Dr. Strotter should show himself inclined to mysticism. One with his understanding of the forces should certainly be able to see how modern psychology itself requires that mysticism be eliminated. The spurious science that Thomasius now boldly promulgates to all the world should show him how the best intelligence degenerates into mere fantasy when it succumbs to this delusion. For had Thomasius only trained himself to think in strict accordance with Dame Nature, instead of playing with this mystic trash, his talents certainly would have allowed him to produce fine scientific work. But on the other path that he has chosen, he could not possibly escape great errors. The Spirit League, however, may believe that errors can be very useful to it. It profits from the general impression that science now has clearly documented what really is such stuff as dreams are made of. George Warmund. The fact that anyone can speak such words as those that we have just been made to hear shows us how pitifully undeveloped in our dark days the understanding is that stems from cultivation of the spirit. We only need to think of early times and recollect what lived within men's souls when science, which is now so dominant, was not yet present even in the bud. When we do this, we see the Mystic League is executing at this time a deed that long was written in the cosmic plan. The great work had to be anticipated that's now succeeding for Thomasius. The way is new by which he's trying now to bring the Spirit's light to human souls. But this same light, you may be sure, was working in all that's been achieved by men on earth. And if you ask where this light had its source, the signs all clearly point to mysticism, as it was nurtured in the sanctuaries, in times when man could not be led by reason. The Brotherhood that now has summoned us wants to allow the mystic light to stream upon the work that boldly tries to wring real spirit knowledge out of human thinking. And we who stand upon this hallowed ground, in this brief moment fraught with destiny, we are the first who, uninitiated, shall be allowed to see the godly spark leap from the Spirit's heights to human souls. Maria Kühne. Thomasius needs not the sponsorship the Rosicrucians contemplate for him, since in a serious, scientific way he shows the soul's path through repeated lives and how it lives in spirit realms between. His deed has made available to all, even to those who shun the sanctuaries, the light to which the mystics used to lead. Thomasius deserves the recognition that's been so richly granted him of late, because he gives our thinking just that freedom that was denied it by the mystic schools. Hermine Hauser. I think the Rosicrucians have no future, though they will surely be remembered long. What they call forth at just this point in time will undermine the temple's whole foundation when it becomes aware of its own power. They have courageously resolved to bind reason and science to the sanctuaries. Therefore Thomasius, whom they receive so willingly into the temple now, will look to after times like its destroyer. Strotter, I have been blamed for saying candidly that we should now express our readiness to work together with the Mystic League in furthering Thomasius's work. One speaker said my views were painful to him, because I ought to know how dangerous the mystics are to real psychology. But mysticism often seemed to me most understandable just at the time when I was most absorbed with all my heart in mechanisms I myself had made. The way I was related to my works showed me the nature of the sanctuaries. And while I was at work, I often thought, what can I be to one who only tries to understand just how the forces work that I've implanted into the machine? And then, again, what can I be to one to whom I lovingly reveal my soul? And it is owing to such thoughts as these that the ideas stemming from the mystics could open to me all their deeper meaning, and thus I know without initiation that in the sanctuaries souls of gods reveal their essence lovingly to men. Katharina Ratzan. The noble words that we have heard just now from Dr. Strater on the sanctuaries must be applauded by the many souls who never could themselves approach the portal through which initiates could freely pass, but still had made themselves acquainted well with all that these initiates could teach. That our ancestors tended to believe the mystics hostile to the light is understandable. Their souls were sealed against all hints of what the temples hold, concealed mysteriously within their walls. This is no longer so. The mystics keep their light but partly veiled. They tell the world all that the non-initiates ought to know, and many souls who have received this light and have enlivened it within themselves experienced this as an awakening of forces in the soul that formerly shrouded in sleep worked all unconsciously. Three knocks are heard. Felix Balder. The masters of this place are coming now, and you will be allowed to hear their words. But only those among you who are free from prejudice will understand the words and feel them working inwardly as light. The power of the initiates will work vigorously on open minds and hearts, if these have been prepared to sacrifice illusions when the truth at last shines out. But they will have no influence at all where error has been hardened into will, and thus the sense for truth has been destroyed. Ferdinand Reinecke. A man who seeks, through lengthy introspection, to recognize himself within himself, may find the time to dwell on words like these. But in our dealings with the Mystic League, it would be better to recall the stories preserved in records or in old traditions about how secret brotherhoods behave. These stories show that many able men have let themselves be lured into the temples when they are told in veiled, mysterious words that in these walls they could expect their souls, starting from wisdom of a lower grade, to move ahead to more advanced degrees and in the end attain to spirit sight. Those who succumbed to such temptation were in the lower grades shown signs and symbols upon whose meaning they were told to brood. They hoped, of course, that in the higher grades the meaning of the signs would be revealed, along with other wisdom. But they found, when they were brought into the last degrees, that, lo, the masters also knew but little about the signs, and that their revelations were empty phrases signifying nothing. And then these men, if not bewitched by words or overwhelmed by idle vanity, would turn away from all such trickery. At this time, I suggest, it would be prudent to think of these historical reports and not be swayed by edifying words. Again, three knocks are heard. The Grand Master of the Secret Brotherhood, Hilary, enters, followed by Magnus Bellicosus, the second preceptor, Albert Torquatus, the first Master of Ceremonies, and Frederick Troutman, the second Master of Ceremonies. The persons assembled group themselves on each side of the hall. Frederick Troutman, the second Master of Ceremonies. This moment is significant for you and us, dear friends, because at last we are united before our ancient holy temple's doors. We sent our summons for the meeting here because this was required by all the signs that our revered Grand Master could perceive in the great plan laid out to guide the earth. In this plan it is clearly indicated that now the time has come to bring together the sacred wisdom of the sanctuary and ordinary human common sense, which seeks the truth far from the mystic paths. But those same signs also revealed to him that all this could not be accomplished till a man should come who could express the knowledge that has its base in reason and the senses in forms that would enable normal men really to comprehend the spirit world. This has occurred. Thomasius succeeded in giving modern science a report containing proofs for all the spiritual things that up to now could be discovered only on mystic paths and in the sanctuaries. His book must be regarded as the bond uniting you and us in spiritual life. You will be able, through this book, to learn how solid is the base of all our doctrines, and this will make you willing to accept from us the further knowledge that till now could be acquired through mysticism only. So we may hope a new life will arise, blending the general sense of all mankind with ancient customs of the mysteries. Magnus Bellicosus, the second preceptor. My brother's words have made it clear to you that we were moved by very earnest signs in sending you the summons to meet here. Our master will soon add a few brief words, giving a deeper explanation of it. My task is now to speak, so far as needed, of that extraordinary man whose work has brought us all together in this place. Tomasius had devoted all his life to painting, till he felt himself impelled to scientific thinking through some inner call. Within the realm of art he could unfold the glorious gifts with which he was endowed only upon his entering those circles that were devoted to true mysticism. There he was made acquainted with the master, who could display to him the early steps of spirit sight according to true wisdom, and then in spirit heights, experiencing himself among creative powers and beings, he painted pictures that could work like magic. This would have driven any other artist to keep himself within his chosen field, while seeking ever higher peaks to climb. To him, however, it was but a spur to use his talents in the way that seemed most apt to benefit mankind at large. He came to see that spiritual science can have a firm foundation only if the sense for rigorous scientific thinking is freed by art from its intense desire for rigid forms and is enlivened so that it can feel the world in all its glory. And so Tomasius has sacrificed his artist's work, which could have been his joy, to benefit his fellow men on earth. If you, my friends, acknowledge this man's merits, you'll understand the meaning of our summons and hesitate no longer to respond. Hilary, the Grand Master. In that Spirit's name who has revealed himself to many souls within this holy place, we now appear before these persons, who till now were not allowed to hear the words that here resound mysteriously. The powers who guide our progress on the earth could not, in the remotest days of yore, reveal themselves in light to everyone. For it was as with children. Gradually the forces had to be matured and strengthened that were designed to carry on our knowing. So was it that mankind in general had slowly to unfold in course of time. In darkness lived at first those impulses that later came to show themselves as worthy to see the spirit light from higher worlds. In those remotest days when earth began, great spirits were sent down from higher worlds to be the wise and watchful guides of men. They cultivated in the sanctuaries those spirit forces that could penetrate mysteriously into the souls who had no conscious knowledge of their leaders. And later the wise masters found that they could choose from out the ranks of men disciples who through renunciations and fierce tests had proved mature enough to be initiated into the sacred wisdom of the mysteries. And when the pupils of the early masters learned to protect the treasures worthily, those mighty teachers took their way again back to their own far distant habitations. The pupils in their turn selected men who could succeed them in the watchful care of spirit treasures. So it went on further through generations numberless to us. And to this day all genuine mystic schools descend directly from that earliest one, which was established by the higher spirits. Humbly we cultivate within these walls what has been left us by our ancestors. Never will we assert that our own merits deserve the offices that we now fill. The lofty spirit powers choose by grace the feeble men they need as messengers, and to them they entrust the precious treasures that can unbind the spirit's light in souls. And it is to these treasures, my dear friends, that we must give you access at this time. Auspicious are the signs that we can see with spirit sight in the world's destiny. Ferdinand Reinecke. how far afield you go to find the reasons that should persuade us to join hands with you in vigorously promoting the great work Thomasius has given to the world. All that you say sounds very beautiful, but in our simple minds it is outweighed by the conviction that if it contains exactly what is needed by men's souls, the book can make its own way in the world. In our opinion, it has won acclaim by reason of the science it contains, and not because it's full of mysticism. If this is so, how can it help the book to have the hearty praise of all the mystics, rather than winning minds by its own virtues? Albert Torquatus, the first master of ceremonies. The spirit science that Thomasius has so convincingly presented there will neither gain nor lose by any praise that we or you may publish to the world. The point is that through it the way is found by which men turn their minds to mysticism. It will accomplish only half its task if looked at as a goal and not a path. And now it's up to you to understand that finally the moment has arrived for reason to combine with mysticism, giving to modern spiritual life a force that can effect real impact only if loosed at just the proper time and place. Curtain, end of scene 1.